Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on Kingston Coaching 106.9 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Well, welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren, and over there is Mr. David Rose North Martino. You're back Rose is to back. Rose today, Mr. Serial Killer. Well, I'm in a mood to scream, right? You know, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what am I going to do? You know, I got to get new headshots because mine aren't good enough.
For that's right.
Book and Buzz Magazine Cover of the Month, July. Geez, I didn't even have to sleep with someone to get that.
Wow.
I know. <That's, laughs> they obviously didn't read new. My books, but, you know, I would have been inside the back cover. You know, bathroom reading 2022.
You just go to Kmart, get a photo.
There's no Kmart anymore. You know, I'm in the dollar store, Ben.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, but I know that you have more in there than me.
No, that's true.
Anyway, that's enough. That's enough of this. Let's get to the serious stuff. We got a real writer.
That's right.
So, now the book, first book, called The Local, a legal thriller, and it's with the author Joey Hartstone. Thank you for being on the show, Joey.
Thank you for having me.
He says with caution. I wonder now, I see this as your first book, and but you've been doing television and film writing, and that's kind of a different animal. And what made you jump over into doing something like this?
Largely that the television and film writing dried up for me for a couple of years. So I kind of hit an interesting point in my career where the TV show I was on, Your Honor, had just wrapped its first season and the pandemic hit, and there was no second season anytime in our near future. So I found myself with more free time than I'd had in about 7 years. And I had this one story that I wanted to tell, and I had envisioned it as a TV series, but had just read the entire Lincoln Lawyer series because I had been up for a staffing position on that TV show, which I didn't get, which also helped free up my time. And I loved that series of books. And I had this legal story that I wanted to tell, and I thought I should try to do it as a novel and see what happens.
Well, that's all right. The Lincoln Lawyer sucks.
No, it's such a good series. And they're doing really well. I'm happy for them. I liked everybody involved. It was a job I wanted and did not get.
Yeah, well, like I said, hey, and you, so Rob Reiner, you did a couple of films directed by him. Did you get to meet him and work with him or no?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was probably one of the more entertaining experiences of my life. The first movie I did was LBJ, so I had written that script, and then when Rob signed on, it became a real movie, and we went and filmed it in New Orleans, so I was there with him for probably 4 months, and I got to work very closely with him. He did rewrites on the script, and we got to do that together, and yeah, it was a dream come true.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing director, actually. I like him a lot. So
yeah,
that's a highlight. Wow. So do you have to write things differently? But like you said this, because I know you're writing, let's say, for a series or a film, it's a different type of writing than writing a story in a book. Even though you might see The Local as something as a series, isn't it a different process for you?
Yeah, writing a book was much more solitary. It sort of reminded me of writing scripts before anyone was reading my scripts, actually. But yeah, I'm used to now either working with somebody like Rob, who has a lot of input and ultimately is the real author of that project, or working in a writer's room on a TV show where I'm getting to work with 7, 8, 9 other writers and collaborating every single day. So this was much more solitary. I had a few very close, trusted readers, first and foremost, my wife, Abby. But yeah, it was a solitary endeavor, and that was fun and liberating in some ways, and also scary because I didn't have the benefit of a lot of people's perspective and input.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes that's good.
It can be.
Yeah, because it can go either way. It can affect the way you write, the direction, and sometimes change parts of the story that might not end up working. So when you get to this, like where you said you had a story to tell. So is this very personal for you?
The character is personal for me. The story came from a conversation I had with a friend of mine who I had gone to college with, and he's an intellectual property lawyer. And he told me that his work was taking him away from Boston into this small town in East Texas. And as he told me about this place I'd never heard of, that was actually the site of more patent infringement lawsuits than anywhere else in the country, I just became fascinated by this little town and the lawyers who work there and what goes on. And I just kept asking him more and more questions over the weeks and months, and I knew I wanted to write about it. And it just was one of those stories that sort of slowly developed over a couple of years, and then the timing was right to really roll up my sleeves and try to tell this one.
So when you tell this kind of a story, but you're using a real setting and reality in it, how do you develop a character into that? Like how do you make a full character that has something that is believable to readers?
Yeah, well, I guess I started with the circumstance because this character's job was so interesting to me. Basically, what happens is major corporations throughout the world are sued in this small town, and they're represented by big legal teams from major cities, but they have to have a local counsel on their team. And as this venue became bigger and bigger, the out-of-town lawyers realized that these local attorneys could play a really invaluable role, because they could communicate with the local juries in ways that the out-of-town people could not. And so I thought, okay, I want this character who's really good in a courtroom, who just is very savvy and also can connect with other human beings on this level, and he's sort of a hired gun. So I started with what his profession was. I borrowed a bit from my life and then from a lot of other characters, from a lot of other legal thrillers that I loved, and tried to come up with something a bit new.
Well, the jacket copy mentions the Byzantine world of criminal law. Did you have to simplify a lot to make it understandable to the average person who isn't a lawyer but likes this type of a story?
Yeah, I hope that I'm positioned fairly well to do that because I'm not a lawyer, so my knowledge only goes so far. I wish I was a lawyer, and I thought about going to law school many times, but hopefully I have just enough understanding to write about it well, but not too much understanding that I go over people's heads, because I don't think that's going to happen. And then the other thing was that because my main character was a patent lawyer, putting him in the world of criminal law was kind of freeing, because he was allowed to make mistakes and to not know things about criminal law because that wasn't his specialty anyway.
Well, so when you said it's important for you, the story, and you were interested, was there a point under the story? Was there some sort of subtext you wanted people to get out of it?
Yeah, a few themes emerged. There was some father-son stuff that came up first with the main character and then with a few secondary characters, and I realized that that theme was certainly in the book and probably an important theme in my life as well. Unresolved issues with parents, I think, you know, it's always good fodder for material. And yeah, I wanted to, there's a love story in there. There's sort of a lot of little small characters that I liked, and I liked that this town is about 23,000 in population, which was about half the size of Flagstaff, Arizona, where I'm from. But I liked writing about a small place where everybody kind of knows each other, and there are secrets there that outsiders are not privy to, but that the town itself was it's a little trite, but to say the town was itself a character, and the insider outsider nature of the story and of patent law here became a theme as well.
Wow. So do you expect any sort of a backlash or any sort of a little bit of a rougher ride when you involve something like this and with, you know, patent lawyer and small town and things like that? Do you have to be careful on how you represent that?
I wasn't too careful. I mean, I don't think you should write about real things and then be concerned about how those subjects are going to respond, because I think that affects the work. But also, I think I treated it fairly. The few people who do pay attention to what goes on with patent litigation in East Texas are usually very critical of it. The issue of patent trolling is very big, and that's where people, usually lawyers, buy up patents that nobody is using, and they buy it up solely for the purpose of suing other corporations. So with John Oliver, NPR do a piece on the Eastern District of Texas, it's always very critical. And I wanted to get into a little bit of that, and I may get into it more if I get the opportunity to write another book. But when I met with lawyers in Marshall, Texas, who do this for a living, I was really taken by how much they love their work. And I like characters who are very passionate about what they do. So I think I shined a little bit of a light on some of the more negative sides of the profession, but there's also a romantic take to it, because these people who do this love what they do, and they're very proud of where they live and what their work is. So I wanted to show that as well.
How do you ever kind of set a certain amount of what you're going to include about yourself in let's say the main character or a character that you use that kind of is you?
Well, the main character delivers an opening statement in the first couple chapters of the book, and it's all about a high school experience that he had. And then another character asks him if it's true, and he says, well, all the best stories are true. And I think that's right. That I think anytime I get a little bit tripped up or something feels insincere in one of my stories, I just go to the well of either myself or somebody that I know very well. And I think if you tell something authentically like that, it comes across. So if for no other reason than as a cheat to come up with a more multidimensional character, I think borrowing from my own life makes it easier.
How do you experience your characters? Do you have an inner monologue? Can you hear the dialogue in your head? Is that how you you create your characters?
Yeah, that's usually when I really feel like I've finally gotten to the point where I can write it. Another cliche, but like when your characters start talking, when I start thinking about it, I don't have to really work that hard to think about how this particular character would speak in a certain situation. Then I know I'm ready to kind of go forward. But, you know, like I said, I'm from Arizona, which is not Texas, but it's not far enough removed that I don't have a pretty good understanding of how people from that state speak. And so more than a lot of characters I've written, I think I felt closer to this character. And so it wasn't that difficult to step into his shoes.
So in essence, you're hearing voices.
Exactly. They're still talking to me. I hear at least two right now. David and Al.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, the important thing is, do you wake up in the middle of the night and find mud on your shoes or something? Shovel by yes. The bed, you know, something.
We're the devil and the angel on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I haven't figured out who's who yet.
But. Yeah.
Well, you never know till it's too late.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, yeah, but you ever feel like a little bit of being vulnerable somewhat by exposing some of your own feelings? Like, and I say this because, you know, it used to be when, as a writer or something, you would do things and there was very little access to you by everyone. But now with the internet and social media and websites and all this sort of stuff, people, you're really exposed to everybody all the time, and people can say anything they want, sometimes even pick out things that you've maybe expressed in your own feelings or beliefs in something in a story or the character, and they can turn around and kind of put it down. Does that sort of, are you cautious of that? Or
yeah, that's a really good question. I think I've evolved over the past, say, 20 years in my writing with that. I remember when I first started writing, I was deathly afraid of exactly what you said. I didn't want to reveal too much of myself. I'm a fairly private person. I wasn't really on social media until this book was getting published, and then I knew I had to be. So yeah, I did try to conceal parts of myself, but I found that the writing was better when I didn't do that. And then honestly, as I think I hit my late 30s, I married my wife. I think I got just more comfortable that I am who I am. Hopefully I'm always a work in progress, but I just don't feel as compelled to try to hide it or put a lot of makeup on it and try to convince you I'm someone who I'm not.
Yeah, and makeup makes you break out anyway.
Exactly.
Take it from Dave.
Yes.
I'll tell you. So with something like this, you said you we're thinking of it, it could be a series and stuff. Would you turn something like this into a series or something like that? Or
yeah, definitely. A series of books or TV series?
Either one. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely envision this as an ongoing character. So I have a couple ideas for what the next two books could be. And then I hope I'll be pitching this as a TV series probably early in 2023. And I would love to see both of those things happen.
Do when you sat down to write this, did you have in mind like the beginning, middle, end? Do you have it all outlined, or is this sort of something like where you have a question, you create a character, and then you just run with it?
Yeah, I do. Most of my work, I think, is in the outlining phase. So I try to plot everything out, especially if there's a mystery component to it, because I don't like not knowing where I'm going. So yeah, I have a very thorough outline. I spend more time working on the outline than I do on the first draft, because I just want to know where I'm going. And every once in a while, something new or surprising happens, but that's pretty rare. And I think it's only because I've already plotted out my course ahead of time.
Now, even though you you write with an outline, do your characters ever surprise you and kind of rebel against that outline, whether it's in the novel that you've written now or in your TV writing?
Yeah, it happens from time to time, and it's usually they're rewarding moments and they're exciting, but it doesn't happen that much. I'm a big researcher. I do a lot of thinking about what I'm doing and crafting the story before time. But yeah, the few times where I feel it going in a different direction, or even better, when it just sort of happens, that's always a thrilling moment.
Do you ever get bogged down in things like research or something, and it kind of interferes with your writing?
Yeah, that's definitely a trap you have to look out for. So the two movies that I wrote were both based on real people and real events, and so research is an integral component to that. But it, as we all know as writers, that you're always looking for something to do other than writing, and researching can be as good of an excuse as anything to not write. So you do have to hit a moment where you decide you've learned enough to start onto the next step.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine the LBJ would have been real controversial, you know, being 2016, Rob Reiner. And I say that because 16, we had the Trump influence, and we're so many conspiratorial thinkers out there, and there's a lot of people that there's such a love hate for LBJ. There's people that think he killed Kennedy, that he's the reason everything bad is in the world, and then there's people that love him. So when you're on that kind of a platform and you have Rob Reiner, who's very public left Democrat person, I would imagine that it would be very I don't know. You would have to think a lot about how you're writing.
Well, it was really interesting because we did two movies. They were both somewhat political, and they both came out after the 2016.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Election, but they were both completed before the 2016 election. So there were always people trying to read into what we were saying, but we had not foreseen the election. So when I was writing LBJ, the comparison I made was I was looking at Johnson and I was looking at Kennedy, and here was Johnson, the sort of older statesman with a lot of experience but not a lot of charisma, who had seen this other person take the job that he wanted, and it was a younger, more charismatic and intriguing person. And it felt very much to me like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, that it was sort of the similar type of dynamics between the two of them. And so I thought, well, this will feel like perfect timing when Hillary's elected, because I think there are some similarities between her and Johnson. And then Trump got elected. And so then there were all these pieces written about how they were both, how Trump and Johnson were both vulgar and trying to find, you know, similarities and themes that would connect to Trump, but that was not really in my mind. I mean, I don't even think Trump was a candidate when I started writing that script.
Oh, come on. You planned it. You're part of the conspiracy.
Aren't you
one of those lizard people and George Soros and all that stuff? Come on.
It didn't work then. I should have written something that would have got more people in the theaters.
Yeah. He should have been lizard. You know, he had dry skin. I just think that it would be very crazy, because people became very aggressive, and it wouldn't be hard for someone to call you names at this particular time. You know,
well, you know, Lyndon Johnson is such an interesting figure, because, and a bit of it is from the time where he's from, but he was socially fairly liberal on a lot of policies. He was also racist. He also is probably more responsible than any other president for the Vietnam War. He was a Southerner. So it wasn't as if I had written a movie about George W. Bush, and I would expect, you know, people would think, okay, I'm a liberal Hollywood person, so it's going to be critical. So you could kind of be critical of Lyndon Johnson without even necessarily revealing what your politics are. And it seems that there were Republicans of the time that didn't like him, but there were also all the anti-war protesters in Johnson's day that also didn't like him. And they're usually much more left-leaning. So I guess there was enough hatred to go around for LBJ that I wasn't too worried that anyone was going to be all that upset.
Yeah, it's always that way, because people try to, I think, assign, let's say, how the 1960s and LBJ would be to, a liberal conservative now in 2020. And that's just not going to – it's a different animal, really.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, Rob Reiner used to talk about that all the time because he would say, I hated LBJ. LBJ was my enemy. I was against the Vietnam War. I thought I was going to get sent to my death because of LBJ. But then this movie is about the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And we started talking about the Great Society and some of the legislation that he got through and what an incredibly liberal agenda that actually was until the Vietnam War really tanked his presidency. So, yeah, he's a complicated figure.
Yeah, I think that's with a lot of people. You know, we see a lot of that with today's time, even because people are more concerned about what perhaps your politics are, or perhaps some of the things you say or do, rather than the achievements you make or what you're actually fighting for. So I think that's kind of a difference in our times. But that leads me to asking, when you write something like this and when you get into this patent lawyer and the book The Local, are you focused or even concerned with political correctness or how you have the characters behave or speak?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it was one thing I had to focus on was, like I said, the main character was certainly taken a little bit from myself. But like, you know, I am someone who has lived in Hollywood for almost 20 years now, and this character lives in a small town in Texas. So I think it made sense that he was probably liberal, that he could be a Democrat, that tort reform would be an issue that would be very important to him and he wouldn't want to see it. So I could kind of guess what his political leanings would be. But at the same time, you know, that's a part of the country where everybody owns a gun. And it's a very conservative part of the country. So a liberal in East Texas is going to be different than a liberal in Hollywood. And I never wanted that character to not ring true. So I did have to at times ask myself, is that really the character or is that just me? And then try to tailor something to be more authentic to an East Texan.
Yeah, I would see that would be very, you would really have to give that a lot of thought because you want to make sure you're right. It rings true. If people have to believe in the character or you lose.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't necessarily want to write a character that I disagree with him on everything, but at the same time, I don't need my characters to be reflections of me entirely. And I don't need to hear my own political views spouted through all of my characters because I feel like that would just get aggravating for anyone in the audience or any of the readers. So it's also fun to embrace somebody who's slightly different than myself and see where that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to reach a certain level of fame before you start just putting yourself in everything.
Oh yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, that you get like Dave there, who's,
oh yeah.
Everything he does is Dave, 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 Dave.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
You know, but, you know, he's a star. But, I mean, I get,
oh, yeah.
Sure.
I get a little tired of that myself.
Everyone does.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, you're off the show for 2 weeks now, bud.
It happens fast.
Yeah, it does. You know, I'm you know, the queen. So when you finish a project like this and you look back at it, do you see things in your writing that you prefer to change now?
Yeah, there's always that point, and it was really hard with the book because when it's a movie, it's not. I don't really have final say over anything. So, in some way, that can be frustrating because you want to have more control. But in another way, it's liberating because I don't have control of it, so I can kind of let it go and know that I'm not going to be the final arbiter of anything. And with the book, that just wasn't the case. So. Yeah, going through it and thinking, wait, is this the actual last draft I'm ever going to read? And that combined with how much time it takes to read through a manuscript versus a screenplay or a teleplay, you can only do it so many times. And yeah, it's a little scary to let it go knowing that you are solely responsible for all the words in there. You can't blame an actor's performance or a director's vision or anybody else. It's just you.
Yeah, because your name's on the cover.
It should be, yeah.
You know, it's not. Well, I don't know. Sometimes I wish my name wasn't, but you know, but if your name's on the cover, the buck stops there, right? So it's kind of you. It's not like you can pass it to the director or producer or all the other stuff and kind of, you know. Oh, that's interesting. So, do things like what's going on in your life affect how your writing comes out? And I say this because you know. We've been through some pretty weird times during the time probably you're writing this. I'd imagine the last couple of years. So you've got this, you know, pandemic and you've got anti-mask and you've got, anti-vax. You got all this stuff going on around you, outside your door, people dying and all this stuff. Does it sort of seep into your writing and make it darker?
Yeah, it definitely could. So this manuscript was completed, I think, at the end of summer of 2020. So the pandemic had certainly begun, but not everything that you mentioned it had fully taken shape. But I would say more it was really the personal parts of my life. Like I said, there's a real father-son dynamic to this, even though the father character is no longer alive. My father died about 12 years ago, so I think that was still something that I hadn't really written much about and I was interested in exploring. And then this my main character's wife has also died before the book begins, and that was actually, I think what happened is I got married to my best friend, and all of a sudden I had this huge fear that she wouldn't be around forever. And it was a fear that I found was just starting to plague me, and I felt like I needed to confront it and deal with it. And so putting it into the story was a way I was sort of able to do that. And I think kind of put it to rest a little bit, which was nice.
Yeah. It's interesting how that is. How many books do you think will be in this series?
Oh, I hope at least a dozen. but no, I have at least three that I really would like to write. And yeah, even if I am fortunate enough to write other things, I would love to just every once in a while return to Marshall, Texas and this character and see what they're up to.
Well, yeah. And you got to put someone in that like me. You got to have a character like me.
Obviously. Yes. Yes.
Well, I'll try it. Who are your influences in your writing itself? And that's a very generic stock question. But I also go for people that influence you, let's say, that are not writers. So do you have sort of, is there music or is there other forces at work here?
Yeah, the writers would be sort of the obvious ones, Scott Turow and John Grisham for sure, and then Michael Connelly as well. And I'd say Aaron Sorkin as a screenwriter was certainly one of the reasons that I wanted to become a screenwriter. And beyond that, I would say, honestly, lawyers. It is really a profession that I wish I had tried, and I admire people who go to law school, and I'm envious of their education and what they can do with their lives. And so, yeah, anytime some lawyer is unfortunate enough to cross paths with me, I'm going to try to corner them and ask them endless questions about what they do.
Boy, you know, lawyers are not necessarily like that well, you know.
Well, I'm fortunate enough that I have several in my family and close circle of friends. So I haven't met a lot of lawyers in circumstances where you wouldn't want to encounter one, at least.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you watch the People's Court?
I do not. Should I?
Well, I'm just throwing it out there to see what happens. Maybe Judge Judy or something. Maybe you'll be the next TV judge.
Yeah, maybe. I saw Steve Harvey on yesterday, so I guess anybody can do it.
Well, anybody can nowadays. Come on, this is the capitalist way. We're gonna make a start of you here, so you know.
Yeah.
And figure out the angle. You kind of look like you could be a judge. I could see you in a black robe and being real mean.
Jeez, I wouldn't turn the job down. I'm only 40 though. I don't know. And with no legal experience. So,
well, so
maybe I missed the boat on who was going to appoint me then to a judgeship.
Well, you should have got in when Trump was there. Come on. What do you think?
Exactly.
Let's get on. Yeah. You could be on the Supreme Court right now.
I could be.
You know. Oh, I'm not going to go there. That could be rough. Well, what do you got coming up next then? Or are you just going back to work for like TV and stuff, or are you going to jump on another book?
No, I'm working on the second season of Your Honor, which is a show on Showtime. It stars Bryan Cranston. So that should be coming out. I think the first episodes will air at the end of the year, and that should keep me busy till 2023.
You know, he's an interesting guy too. How do you make things or keep things fresh, I guess, in something like a series writing? Because I would imagine writers like you are inundated. There should be a ton of work with all these streaming services coming up now, or is that wrong?
No, that's right. It's a really good time to be a television writer in particular. When I got my master's degree in screenwriting, and at the time most of my fellow students wanted to be film writers, and there were already more jobs in TV than film, but now 10 years later it's so much more so that almost every writer you know at least does some work in television if they're working professionally.
Yeah. What do you kind of use some of the same ideas over again when you're doing stuff like that? Of course, no one listens, yeah. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, you recycle the good ones for sure. Hopefully put a new spin on them so that no one knows. But I think the way you just keep it fresh is honestly the writer's room. So I'm in a writer's room right now with 9 other writers, and there's 12 or 13 people in there on any given day. And that's the most helpful part of the creative process, is just having a lot of different people and a lot of different perspectives, and put them all together and something new should come out of that room every day.
But there must be one person in that room you hate.
It's just myself.
Oh, come on. Give us some names. Give us some.
No. It's really fun, especially having written the book and doing this experience. It is fun to get back into a room. I hadn't been in a writer's room since, I think, 2018. So, and I hadn't really had a job that took me out of the house in a long time. Not that this takes me out of the house. It's all on Zoom. But metaphorically, I get to leave the house for a few hours. So it's fun.
Is there a lot of pressure writing for TV?
Yeah, well, so I'm actually the showrunner of the show this season, which is a new role for me, and that has a lot more pressure than the old jobs. But there's pressure. I think most of it is on the showrunner. For the writer's room, you're really trying to deliver for the showrunner and get outlines, stories, and scripts into them, and then the showrunner has to deal with actors, directors, sort of every other department, and it's pressure, and it's just a lot of different things to juggle at once.
Yeah, especially with these, you know, highfalutin actors.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun getting to know the actors a bit. Now, I mean, it used to be different in television, but now a lot of TV writers really don't get to go to set. They don't get to meet the actors and directors. They don't produce their own episodes, and it's sort of a bummer. But it's nice to be able to have the opportunity to do that.
Are you going to give us some gossip?
I don't have any gossip yet. I have not left this writer's room, so all I can tell you is about the writers that I work with, and writers aren't interesting enough. None of us are, so.
Yeah, no, we don't care.
We'll see writers. After we film it. Yeah. No,
I want some gossip. Come on. I want some.
I have not met any of the actors yet, so I don't know anything, but okay. I'll try to get some for the next time you have
get
me.
Get some and make something up if you can't, right? I
mean, okay, I'll try.
Now, how do you like to interact? I guess, like you said, you weren't really a social media and stuff, so. What's the outlay now? You've got like a website, you've got social media accounts. Where can your favorite fans and readers find you?
Yeah. I have a website, joeyhartstone.com. I'm at JC Hartstone on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, you can find me there at any of those three. And this is an interesting experience, because when you're seated between Rob Reiner and Woody Harrelson, nobody wants to talk to you. And so that's what I'm used to, but now it's just me. And so if anyone bothers to read the book and they want to reach out, I guess I'm the person they're going to want to talk to. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, we recommend all hate mail going there, and everybody that's upset, please.
I will read it all and take it all very
take
personally,
it all in,
I assure you.
Personally. You know, you'd be like me. You just go after them, you know, just take them out. You know.
No, you know those people who say they don't read bad reviews. I don't know if they're ever telling the truth, but I won't even pretend that that's not true. That would be my way. I will read anything negative about myself and believe it all.
Yeah,
to my core.
Well, you know, you can take two aspects. You know, I get a lot, and let me tell you,
okay.
It's the best way. He said, "I bet." Yeah, but the best way to deal with it is either you just say, "Yeah, you're right." Absolutely. I cannot write. Everything you say is right. Or you can always say, look, I don't go to your job and slap the sailor's cock out of your mouth. So don't tell me how to do my job. So let me tell you, that's the two best ways.
Okay.
And you get even more of this same mail, and I can't figure out why.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, we're going to have all of that up on our website, so people can find you with one click, and then they can kind of pass on their love for you, you know?
Great.
So we appreciate it. Now, the book we're talking about is called The Local, and the author is Joey Hartstone, who's been our guest. And like I said, please, he needs money, so buy the book, okay? So that he can start having his own series, you know? People, get on it. You know, so well. Thank you. Thank you for being here, Joey. This has been
thank you for having me.
Been a thrill.
I had a blast. Yes.
tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.